Hey, everybody, before we get into today's show with David Bloomberg talking about why the latest Survivor player lost, just a quick reminder, Mother's Day is right around the corner. It's actually going to sneak up on you. May 8th is Mother's Day this year, but Pro Flowers has got you covered for Mother's Day this year because moms are always experts on just about everything. My mom is an expert on a number of different things. Maybe Survivor is not the thing, considering that Joey Amazing is her favorite player, but she's always been there for me. She even came to visit me one time when I was on Survivor. And if you want to look like an expert this Mother's Day, you need to check out Pro Flowers, because you could get your mom 100 blooms with a free glass vase for just $19.99 plus shipping and handling. Or to make her day extra special, you could upgrade to a premium vase and add gourmet chocolates for just $9.99 more. Go to proflowers.com today and use our code RealityTV, because ProFlowers takes the guesswork out of sending mom, grandma, or your wife the perfect Mother's Day gift, and you can't beat the price and convenience of ProFlowers. They take care of all the details. ProFlowers are guaranteed to be fresh and beautiful and last for at least 7 days, or you get your money back. You're not getting any sort of guarantee like that on Survivor, and you get to choose the delivery date you want, and it's guaranteed. It's a no-brainer. You don't even have to use your frontal lobes. So go to proflowers.com, get 100 blooms for mom with a free glass vase for $19.99 plus the shipping and handling, or even upgrade to the premium vase and add the gourmet chocolates for just $9.99 more. Go to proflowers.com today. Use the promo code RealityTV. That's proflowers.com with our promo code RealitySpaceTV. Hey, everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino back here to talk about why the latest player lost Survivor. And today we're talking about the plight of Scott Pollard, what went wrong for him this season, with our good buddy David Bloomberg. David, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Oh, very good, David. Back here, not doing this on a card table in the apartment attached to my in-laws' house. So very excited.
Yeah. I was excited too, to be able to do the Worldwide Juggling Podcast.
Yes. They have a juggling podcast? I shouldn't be surprised.
I thought that's what we were doing. There were several requests by listeners for some combat juggling podcasts.
Okay, sure. Well, why not?
The one problem, I'm not sure how amenable juggling is to podcast coverage.
Right.
I feel like it would sound like Jeff Probst narrating a challenge. He's grabbing his balls and club. They're in the air. Look at him handle those balls. He's swinging his club around now. I've never seen so much ball movement.
Right. And how would you hold the microphone?
You'd have to be chasing after it as well.
Yeah.
even back in my college days, before Jeff Probst's double entendres became known, I had a bumper sticker, which I may still have somewhere, that said, jugglers do it with their balls in the air.
All right. Well, this is probably more than people bargained for at this point already, David. So let's bring it back. Let's go and talk about the week in Survivor, because we had another really, really great episode and such an exciting moment in the show's history. I mean, could you think of another moment like this where you had, going back to all the different seasons of Survivor that you've covered in your time with Reality News Online, can you think of a moment that was just such a, not even from a game perspective, but where people were just cheering at this?
You know, I feel like there probably was something, maybe not like this, but I cannot place it. I can't think of anyone, no. And yeah, it was a mixture of cheering and gasping. And, so Jeff Probst was right in saying people will be screaming at their TV sets.
Maybe going back to the original Row 2-4 coconut chop, where those people, with all due respect to John Carroll and that group, I felt like that the people that you were rooting for were maybe all those people that were not in the Row 2-4, and it seemed like that they didn't have a shot to knock off the Row 2-4. And then at that point, when they turned on them, that was really a big moment. Bunch of them like that.
Yeah, that coconut chop that's just a classic. Mm-hmm. I'm surprised they haven't brought something like that back in a little while. Mm-hmm. I know that players figured it out. Well, yeah, I mean, I guess they did in San Juan del Sur, and they just all agreed on who was going to win. So maybe that's why they haven't brought it back.
All right. Well, let's bring it back to Ty and what went on this week that ultimately led to Scott losing the game. Do you have any thoughts on Scott before we dive into looking at your rules for how a Survivor player should be operating?
Well, you know, first thought is so much for the Toteng Tai Trang Alliance.
Yeah.
I'm just glad. Yeah, I'm just glad it lasted long enough that we could say that, you know.
Yeah.
And also, I know that Steven wrote his blog with a whole Star Wars theme. But separately, because of all the dark side, light side, you know, references, I was thinking if Ty was the apprentice for the dark side being drawn over, I think what those guys forgot is that the dark side apprentice almost always kills off his master.
Mm.
And so the prophecy has once again come true.
Yeah. So a deep cut Star Wars take, David.
That's right. That's right. But, you know, what caused Apprentice Ty to flip at this time? Did he do it for strategic purposes, emotional purposes? Could Scott have done anything differently to prevent this blindside? It's time to figure out why Scott lost.
Okay. All right. Let's talk about it. All right. Let's start off with rule number one, scheme and plot. So how did Mr. Pollard do in his transition from NBA player to Survivor player with the scheming and plotting?
Well, despite Scott pretending to be a caveman and not understanding strategy on Twitter.
A caveman lawyer.
Yes. Well, or yes, it does seem pretty clear to me that he did know he had to scheme and plot, and he did the right thing. He made an alliance with Jason on day one. He had also made one with Jennifer, although that got overturned by Jason when she started making alternate plans. Mm-hmm. But he definitely heeded the words that I had written that players should make alliances from the very beginning.
Yes.
And I also think it's worth noting that in one interview, Scott said, quote, "The game is about lying and backstabbing and screwing people over," end quote. Mm-hmm. So he definitely understood that part. But at the same time, he was proud in his day after video that he didn't screw anybody over. That is, if he made a promise, he stuck with it. And indeed, that was why he believed his offer to Aubrey would make sense for her, because he came to her with promises if only she would do what he wanted and vote off Sydney.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but what Scott clearly didn't realize was how Aubrey and Sydney had gotten to be close allies. So the fact that the guys brought back the machete and the axe and Ty made a fire, etc., as he had discussed in a confessional online, it just wasn't terribly likely to sway her. He made sort of an emotional appeal to her that he, Ty, and Jason would go back to being the fun-loving guys and providers that they had previously been. But I just don't think most of the other players cared about that aspect of things. He needed to make a strategic appeal. But honestly, I'm just not sure that there was one that he could have made at that point, because certainly saying, hey, let's vote off one of your closest allies, not a real good way to convince her.
Yeah.
So if you're going to approach someone with a deal, you have to make sure that at least they believe there's something in it for them. And I don't see what real upside Scott thought he was giving Aubrey. But meanwhile, Aubrey clearly realized there wasn't an upside there for her.
I mean, I think that that's really the biggest reason also we don't negotiate with terrorists. And I'm using the word terrorists in the very abstract sense of somebody who says, hey, if you give us what we want, we will not do this or we won't do this. And then the problem is that the person who's already doing that, I don't know how much you could necessarily trust them. I know you're saying that Scott felt like, well, he was good about his word, so she could have trusted him, but it wasn't really a move in her best interest to be making in the first place.
Right, right. Let's say kidnappers or machete nappers instead of terrorists.
Right, right. You could give them the ransom, but it's almost like you reinforce the behavior.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I think what really went wrong for Scott in this rule was that he just didn't see how one of his main allies was falling away from him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, from what we saw on TV, Ty felt like a second-class member of his own alliance. Now, Scott said in, well, probably just about every interview, that it wasn't true, that he specifically took Ty aside after the discussions we saw to make sure that Ty was okay with everything, and he said he was. But the way I see it is just because Scott tried to make him feel okay about things doesn't mean Ty was himself 100% honest when he said it was okay.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've all had those experiences where we talk to someone to make sure, hey, you're not mad at me or anything. And they say they are. And then later you find out that no, they really weren't. I mean, I've seen it happen in relationships, at work, you name it. Now, of course, this has never happened between me and my wife. And I'm sure it's never happened with you and Nicole either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
but, you know, Scott failed to see that coming here.
It's also possible that Ty might have wanted to have his cake and eat it too. Like, you know, he wanted the decisions to be made, but he also doesn't want to come off as the bad guy to anybody.
Well, right, right. And I think we'll probably talk about that a little later. You know, I do give credit to Scott for seeing signs that Ty might not be totally comfortable with the way they put forth their ideas and debated them, which is, you know, why he pulled Ty aside to talk about it. But I just don't feel like he and Jason really analyzed what happened, because as we saw it, Ty came to them and said Aubrey was willing to work with them and he thought they should do it. And then this somehow completely turned around to Jason and Scott saying they should instead vote out Aubrey because nobody on the other side would ever expect it. You could almost see Ty's head spinning at this turn of events. He comes to them and says, hey, I have a new ally. And they say, hey, great, let's vote her out.
Right, yeah. Right, right. Although in fairness also to those guys, that if you're Jason and Scott and Ty comes to you and says, hey, Aubrey wants to work with us, I think, don't you kind of have to feel like, yeah, this is a trap. She doesn't want to work with us. Why would she want to work with us?
Well, I don't know. Scott had approached her to work with them.
I think work with them in terms of like, hey, we're going to vote out Sydney next.
Well, then use her for that.
Yeah.
I mean, if, you know, maybe use her for that.
But you're right. They didn't handle it well. But I feel like that I would be very suspicious if I was Jason and Scott and I heard that Aubrey wanted to work with us.
Right. The thing was, we didn't see that. And that doesn't mean it didn't happen, I recognize. But we didn't see them saying to Ty, hey, it sounds like she's playing you. Let's talk about this. It was just a complete turnaround of, ha ha, they'll never expect this.
Yeah. Yeah. No.
Yeah.
He was literally saying,
no, 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 no.
I just made a new friend. Okay, yeah, so that's a fair point.
Yeah. Now, speaking of Aubrey, I do want to talk about her a little bit because she obviously played a key role in Scott losing, and she did it by out-scheming and out-plotting him. While Scott and Jason were riding the high of their success in getting the women to vote out Debbie and expecting Ty to stay with them, Aubrey recognized the old Sesame Street game of one of these things is not like the others.
Mm-hmm.
And clearly believed Ty could be separated from Scott and Jason. And, you know, she was right. She must have picked up on the moral dilemma he was going through or something about him, you know, clued her in that this was going on. And from there, as Steven said on Know It Alls and in his blog, Aubrey offered Ty a great pitch to flip, making him comfortable, encouraging him that it was the right thing for him to do, giving him a say in what was going on, and so on. She appealed to both his emotions and his strategy, and it worked. You know, Scott apparently tried to make Ty feel like part of the team, but I think that Aubrey did a better job of it and pulled him away. So Scott knew what he needed to be doing, but he got outplayed when it came to this rule.
What about rule number two, which is don't scheme and plot too much? Do you think that this was an issue for Scott?
Well, while he was getting out schemed, he did also make some mistakes related to this rule. And the main one is that Scott didn't keep his scheming secret. He and Jason were an open and obvious duo in direct violation of a key part of this rule. Everyone knew that the two of them were almost entirely inseparable, which, you know, it made them too powerful to be allowed to both stay in the game. As the rule notes, open partnerships are just begging to be split up.
Mm-hmm.
And when it comes to a partnership like this, one problem is that if one of them is unavailable to be voted out, those plotting against them can just switch their votes and still accomplish almost the same goal. In this case, Jason was the original target. And we know that because there was a Ty confessional telling us that he was planning to turn on Jason and Scott, you know, and go with Aubrey since before the immunity challenge, because he said that it was bad for him and Aubrey that Jason won immunity.
Mm-hmm.
So he then said that he told Aubrey they would just switch to Scott because otherwise, well, it would have been Aubrey. And then they can get Julia later. So even though Scott was not the original target, Jason was unavailable. That made Scott the easy and obvious choice because he was such a clear partner.
So for Scott, in terms of the over scheming, did you see any of that?
I don't really see over scheming, just open scheming.
What about in terms of the sabotage? What about in terms of like sort of like the shenanigans at tribal council last week with the rock, paper, scissors? Do you file that under scheming and plotting too much?
No, I really don't. I mean, the sabotage and stuff, you know, I think we'll talk about that in a bit. But the whole kind of peacocking around tribal council, I don't think that was scheming and plotting too much. I think that was, you know, just putting on a show more than anything. I think scheming and plotting too much would have been more if he had, you know, kind of done what he had been quoted as saying, where you got to screw people over and backstab them. And he's right in that he really didn't do any of that. If he said he was with you, he was with you, to the point that he wouldn't even write Jennifer's name down early on.
Yeah.
Even though it had no bearing on anything, you know, it's not like she was going to the jury. It's not like anyone was going to judge him for it. If he said he was with you, he was with you.
All right. What about rule number three in terms of being flexible? How do you think Scott did? Because I'm sure it's not easy to be flexible when you're 6'11".
Yeah. Well, he's nowhere near as physically flexible as Debbie, clearly. Mm-hmm. But I'm afraid he doesn't get any points for being strategically flexible. He came in, he made an alliance, and that was good. But he was planning to hold tight to that alliance come hell or high water. You know, several weeks ago, I said that from the confessionals we'd seen, there was no way Scott was ever turning on Jason. And today I still stand by that. Mm-hmm. You know, Jason, on the other hand, said things in a confessional indicating that he was always thinking about the possible necessity of stabbing an ally in the back before they could do it to him. Mm-hmm. So even if Scott had made it, you know, past this vote, it looks to me like his dedication to Jason was stronger than Jason's dedication to him, possibly.
Yeah.
But even if I'm wrong about that, it still doesn't change the fact that Scott was never open to any path forward that didn't involve Jason.
Yeah.
He wasn't, you know, he wasn't off talking to Aubrey about flipping to her side. He was talking about them together, playing nice if she would flip on her people. And with him being that rigid in his loyalty, anybody who has allied with him and Jason knew that at most there was only one open slot in the finals. And if they were thinking about the possibility of a final two, well, then they were in real trouble with those two together.
That sort of idea about loyalty that we talked about with Scott and how he was going to always keep his word to people, I do think it's two sides of the same coin in terms of when we're looking at him being flexible. I think that that loyalty is a positive, but I think that when it comes to flexibility, where he won't even write down Jennifer's name at the second vote, I do think that's a little bit of a liability to his game.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. If you won't even think about the possibility of turning on an ally, then you've got tunnel vision. Mm-hmm. You're only conceiving of one path forward, and it's with whomever you swore your bond to. And you just can't be that wedded to an idea in Survivor.
Rule number four is don't let your emotions control you. Do you feel like, and again, we're talking about sabotage and things like that, do you think that this comes from an emotional place from Scott?
I think it's both. And I you know, to start with, I think that Scott did play with his emotions to some extent, and I can understand it because he's been playing games professionally for his whole career, his whole adult life, basically. You know, anyone who's ever watched professional sports knows that most of the athletes involved get emotional while they're playing, you know, to the point that we will see them do stupid things in the middle of a heated game. I mean, how many times have we seen an unnecessary roughness penalty because a football player just got too into it in the heat of the moment, even though, you know, it was a complete game changer and there was no way he should have done it. He, you know, was just acting on emotion.
Well, especially if it's a Bengals Steelers playoff game.
Right. And it happens all the time. And you sit there at home or I sit there at home and go, oh my God, that was so stupid. Why would you do that? Well, because they've got, you know, it's just all happening right then and there. They're playing emotionally. And I think Scott did definitely bring some of that with him. He was certainly not immune to that. And so that, you know, brings us to your question about the sabotage campaign. I'm going to say it was a combination of both emotion and strategy. I think that from a strategic perspective, they were trying to shake up the game because of the bad position in which they found themselves. And there was some calculation about the way they went about it. So, for example, Scott, the way I saw it, didn't get just totally pissed off and in a fit of anger, pour the water on the fire. He calculated it. He did it because they were getting around his previous sabotage efforts. You know, he had hidden the axe and the machete, and here they were using a saw and, you know, cooking stuff. So he was like, well, fine, we're just going to end all doubt now. Goodbye, fire.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I don't think that was anger. I think that was a calculated move on his part.
See, I'll say that I think that pouring the water on the fire, I think that that came from a place of frustration. Like, the idea to do what they did, because of the fact that it was premeditated, I think that it less is emotional. Where I had seen in the comments recently, somebody was saying, Rob, well, why did you say that what Jatia did was something that was beyond the game of Survivor? And to me, like, Jatia and Brandon Hance is sort of like, oh, you think you can vote me out? Well, I'm going to sabotage the camp. I'm going to be going, that's sort of like the equivalent of like, okay, oh, you're breaking up with me? I'm throwing all your stuff outside.
Yeah, I'm putting your bunny in a pot.
let's not get into the animal metaphor before we get into next week's episode. But to me, this was, I think that especially when you have Scott and Jason and Ty, that group having access to three of the hidden immunity idols, I think it was more of, hey, this is going to be something to get the votes on us so that we know where the votes are going so we can play the idols in a way. And then I think when they got around what he was doing, then it was like from a point of, hey, oh, so you think you're so smart now? Well, now I'm going to dump out the fire. And I think that that was probably from he was frustrated how easy they were able to thwart the sabotage.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could see it that way as well. Either way, I think you end up with a mixture of strategy and emotion. And also, you know, I mentioned last week that Jason told me, you know, note that he was not one that was participating in the obvious acts of sabotage, but he was there, you know, rooting them on and encouraging them. So I think he was using some emotions of Scott's that way. And, you know, getting him riled up, or, you know, letting him get swept at least partially away by emotion.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, it was only after things had seemingly turned around for them a little bit when they got the other alliance to vote out Debbie that, okay, they were ready to come back and play nice again because their plan had worked.
Mm-hmm.
But that is not the only place, or really necessarily even the most important place, that emotion came into play for Scott. Because Scott said in his 7 Things to Know on CBS.com, what happened to him was a true blindside because he never thought Ty would turn on him. And it's clear that he believed that he and Ty had an emotional bond. I think that emotion is what blinded Scott to the possibility that Ty would ever turn against him. So, you know, that bromance that they had there. And it also may have been why he was so willing and eager to believe Ty when Ty told him everything was fine in those private conversations that we talked about a few minutes ago.
Mm-hmm.
Ty, on the other hand, was able to overcome that emotional bond that they had formed and put an abrupt end to the bromance.
Let's talk about rule number 5, which is pretend to be nice, play the social game, keep your politics and controversial beliefs to yourself. Okay, well, I think that we're getting into more of this stuff with pretending to be nice and how he acted around the camp. What was your take on Scott with Rule 5?
Well, you know, in the last rule, we discussed whether it was emotion or strategy that played into the sabotage. No matter which it was, as you suggested, it was clearly a violation of this rule because it totally blew up his social game and certainly went against the idea of pretending to be nice. You know, Scott has said that they were fun and good to be with for most of the game. I have no particular reason to doubt him, but the sabotage campaign took them to a whole different place. Is it possible he could have come back from it? Well, maybe, but it was going to take a lot, I think. And clearly he didn't have that kind of time available to him.
Mm-hmm.
He might have had that kind of time if he had been in for the rest of the game, but really maybe not. Now, do I think that Scott was targeted specifically because of the reign of terror that they had there? No, I think it was kind of the reverse, that the guys started doing it because the game had already turned against them. But that behavior made it that much more difficult to endear himself to Aubrey or anyone else in trying to get back into the swing of the game. I suppose if they hadn't done that, it's possible they might have been able to, you know, find some cracks and get in there. But after that, it kind of created this us and them mentality, and they just weren't going to be able to break through that wall.
Rule number six, which is don't be too much of a threat. Now, when you're 6'11 and you're a person who has made millions of dollars in your professional NBA career, what do you do to not be too much of a threat?
I mean, if we were to ask Scott himself, he would say he wasn't a threat. You know, he said that in interviews, that despite what others may have thought, he didn't perform well in most challenges. He could have been beaten at the end because he, you know, was a millionaire and so on. But they voted him out as if he was a threat, which didn't make sense to him. So, you know, okay, was he a threat? Wasn't he a threat? It doesn't necessarily matter because of what he said, which is the others thought he was a threat. So whether he actually was or not doesn't really matter nearly as much as what the others were thinking. He would have needed to convince them that he wasn't one. And that's kind of hard for a guy that size to do, just looking at him. You know, I mean, I think he lost 30 some or 40 some pounds, and he was still 260, 270 pounds or something yes. like that. You know, that's, you know, like three Debbies.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he was, you know, seemingly of little threat in many of the challenges, but he still looked like a big threat. And you don't know what challenges are coming up, if there were any involving strength or certain types of dexterity that he might be good at. You know, I'm sure they could see him as a threat in those ways.
I do feel like it's rare to have a sheer strength challenge as an individual immunity, but I'm sure it's something that people thought about in terms of like, boy, I bet Scott's going to be really good at the individual immunity challenges.
Right. And usually if they do have those strength ones, it's like based on their body weights, in which case he was dead, you know, I mean, because they base it usually on their initial body weights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So he'd have to hold up 300 and some pounds or, you know, that's just not happening. But it's still hard, I think, for the players to think about that when they see, you know, Scott the Giant standing there in front of them.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You know, another part, the one part of the threat that Scott thought there was when Jason handed over the idol to him. He said at one point that he thought that was kind of the final straw, because Ty could get rid of Scott and Jason's idol in one fell swoop. It would be part of being a threat, but as we talked about earlier, Ty apparently already had this plan hatched, you know, before that ever happened. So I don't think it was a contributing factor. Just kind of a bonus.
I agree. I don't think that Ty at any point was like, hey, oh, this is going to be a, you know, double bonus if I am able to get one over on Scott here. I saw that he has Jason's idol, so I could take out Scott and Jason's idol at the same move.
Right. But what about Scott's statements that he couldn't win and therefore everyone should have wanted to take him to the end? I think specifically he said, you know, something to the effect that he was a millionaire athlete jerk who nobody liked, at least in the portrayal. So nobody would vote for him at the end, right?
Okay.
Well, maybe. I'm not convinced that the jury goat thing is 100% true, because I do think that there's a lot of jurors who would vote for guys who, okay, maybe they pissed them off, but at least they played the game compared to someone who just rode their coattails the whole time. Now, we know that's not always true, and, you know, it depends of how big of a jerk you were. But I think that it's not clear that Scott was obviously going to lose.
To your point that they wanted to vote out Jason, from what we're saying and we're seeing in the secret scenes, that they might have said, okay, well, let's keep Scott around longer, because that he is an easier person to beat in the end than Jason, but Jason won immunity.
Right. And the other thing is, you can't keep every jury goat around, because at some point the jury goats become the majority. And then you find yourself on the jury instead of at the final tribal council, and you're having to pick from the lesser of two or three evils. You know, there are still some people in the game who can't win. For example, oh, there's that guy. I've seen him once or twice. What's his name again?
Come on.
Joe. That's right. Yeah, he can't win. period. End of story. But I don't think Scott was in that same category. Scott may have had the possibility of winning. And so there was a little bit of threat level in there. But I think he was a bigger threat to just get rid of people before then, you know, if they hadn't gotten rid of him. And so that brings up the question of whether he was indeed a threat to vote out Ty. So was he a threat to Ty specifically? Because we saw Scott and Jason tell Julia that it was their plan to keep her and get rid of Ty. You know, the question was, that truth or fiction? Well, upon being voted out almost immediately after, Scott said he intended to go to Final Three with Ty and Jason. Mm-hmm. The way I'm looking at it, he had no reason to lie at that point. His game was over. My guess is that what they told Julia was when they were lying. They were just telling her that to make her feel more comfortable. Mm-hmm. But how comfortable did Ty feel? If he presumed that there would be a Final Three and he didn't flip here, he would have had to pretty much just hope he'd be brought along with them, despite the fact that the two of them believed that Ty would be able to beat them. If there were a Final Two, well, then he was screwed unless he wins the final immunity. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's the biggest part of the threat that Scott represented when it came to Ty. And of course, since Ty was the all-important blindside swing vote, that's what mattered the most.
Yeah, but is Ty any better with Aubrey and Sydney?
Well,
I mean,
maybe.
They don't seem like they have been together from the start. I mean, maybe, but seems like that they are working as closely together as Jason and Scott are.
Right, and I think we'll get to that.
Okay.
But before we do, I want to talk a bit more about Scott saying in interviews he couldn't understand why people kept voting out people who weren't threats.
Okay.
Again, people they couldn't vote at the end, like himself and Debbie. It goes back to something I hinted at in Rule 3, which was, you know, again, there are only three or maybe two spots available in the finals. If everyone wants to get to the end with people they can beat, it becomes a fight not to just stay in the game, but to stay in the game with someone who you think the jury will like or respect less than you. You know, last season, Jeremy found himself in a great situation, having two people who just wanted to get to the end with him and see what would happen. But I don't think you can generally count on that happening. You know, the game is about voting people out, and that includes people who may be a threat now, even if they aren't a threat to win later. And so that's where I feel that Scott was.
Okay, well then let's get into our final rule, which is rule number 7, to vote out the weak and then the strong and then the weak and the strong. Scott seems pretty strong to me.
Yeah, and I think we are still in the post-merge portion of the game where the smartest thing to do is vote out the strong who are not members of your alliance, which is clearly what Aubrey, Sydney, and Joe felt that they were doing here. But Ty was in Scott's alliance at the time. So was it the right thing for Ty in particular to do? This is where we get to your question, because most of the podcasting this week has said, no, it's not the right thing. He had Scott and Jason and maybe Julia, and the guys were great jury goats. So the question really is whether he's in a better or worse position now. If Jason and Scott were telling the truth and really did plan to take Ty to the end, then I would agree with, you know, a lot of the podcasting that said, no, Ty did not make a good decision. Mm-hmm. Earlier, I mentioned that I think Scott was telling the truth, that it was his plan to go all the way in that threesome. The issue, though, is I'm not sure if Jason was. The way he's been playing, I don't think we can say that he necessarily intended to go all the way to the end with both of them. You know, he didn't come out here to replicate Russell Hance's finishes.
Yes.
And, you know, we saw him go against Scott's wishes much earlier in voting out Jennifer. So you've got a bit of multi-level thinking going on here. So you've got Julia and Ty, who both figure they could beat the guys at the end. But the guys, especially Jason, knew that they could be beaten at the end by either of those other two. So would they, again, especially Jason, allow that to happen? And I think the answer is no. That means Ty was doomed if he stayed with the guys. But maybe he's doomed now anyway. And as Shireen said on the recap show, he's just become the kingmaker, because he's the fourth person in a four-person alliance now. you know, Aubrey lured him over by sweet talking him, but I can't imagine her voting out Sydney or Joe when it comes time to break up the foursome.
Yeah. So are you better off being the fourth person in a four person alliance or the third person in a three person alliance?
And the answer is, I think that Ty, well, first of all, Ty would have been much better off if Jason had not won immunity, because then they'd have voted off Jason. And I do think that, you know, Ty and Scott could have kept their bond there and maybe worked on some sort of other flip. I don't see that happening with Jason. You know, is he better or worse now? Yeah, I don't know. I think that he was, you know, damned if he stayed and damned if he flipped. Whereas, you know, obviously Aubrey and Sydney and Joe were correct to vote off Scott. Ty, I don't think it matters to his game overall. I just think he's screwed.
So you feel like better to go down with the people that are more likable overall?
Probably for him, given his personality.
Okay, let's get into these appendices. And the first appendix is do whatever it takes to get idols. Now, Scott seemed very content to let Jason get the idol when it first came up, although he was the one who left the game with Jason's idol in his pocket.
Yeah. He did seem just perfectly happy, even though he helped get the idol. He seemed perfectly happy to let Jason hold on to it and control it. I think it just shows how much trust there was between the two of them, you know, because Jason just happily handed it over to him when it was needed. But this appendix also has two parts, not just what you should do to get one, but what you should do when you have one. Since Scott walked out of the game with Jason's idol in his pocket, clearly he should have done something different there. Or maybe Jason should have. Mm-hmm. But I think this gets back to the emotional issue we discussed back in the fourth rule. Scott had no idea that Ty would ever flip on him. So with that in mind, he felt perfectly safe with Ty keeping his idol, also known as his half of the super idol. They could have taken an alternate way of playing it. They could have planned to both play their respective idols in the normal manner, not going the super idol route. And Scott would have been safe. They would have burned both idols and, you know, all the votes cast against either Ty or Scott would have been gone. But they decided to take what they thought was essentially zero risk and wait to see if the opposition would once again vote out one of their own, as, you know, they kind of hoped they would. Unfortunately for Scott, that plan wasn't quite as zero risk as he thought, because again, he just presumed Ty was with him. As soon as Ty's not with him, well, then, he's gone. He doesn't even realize what has happened. And that's where you get that moment of TV of him just standing there like, what the hell just occurred here?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. Could he have used the idol differently? Yeah. Again, walking out with an idol in your pocket is never a good thing. Yeah. But I think it just goes back to, you know, what we had discussed earlier. It wasn't so much a bad idol play as it was a bad emotional read.
And then finally, the final tribal council, we're talking about what are you doing to get votes from the jury? Boy, it doesn't feel like Scott had a lot of votes coming his way.
No. And, you know, even as we're getting closer to the end, I still think this vote represented a battle of which side would make it to the finals rather than worrying about seating the jury with people who will vote for you or getting rid of jury threats. So this appendix, I just don't think applied here.
So when we look at the big picture, and it's always a big picture when we talk about Scott Pollard,
it's got to be a really big picture.
What's your final assessment?
Well, I'd say Scott definitely did some things right here in his time on Survivor. He came here not just as some sort of former athlete looking for something to do, but to actually play the game. He found a solid alliance from day one, and he rode that the whole time he was there. Unfortunately, he became too attached to that alliance, both publicly and privately. The other players saw that he and Jason were a super tight duo that had to be split up, while Scott also wasn't going to consider playing in any way that didn't involve taking Jason with him. Scott worked to make other allies as well, such as Ty, but the implications of the social game Scott and Jason were playing, I think, just eventually wore on Ty's morals, as did Ty's realization that he might not be able to make it to the end with them. So Scott got outmaneuvered by Aubrey, in part because his own scheming was too open, and his bromance with Ty blinded him to the possibility that Ty would ever turn on him. And despite what he thought, the others most certainly did see him as a threat, which he was if they had let him stay around any longer. And that is why Scott lost.
All right, now this is where things really start to move forward and we get to our final seven. Things are always crazy at the final seven. Have you given any thought to what's going to happen next week?
Well, as a matter of fact, I have.
Yeah, or this week at this point.
Yeah, right. You know, the CBS preview for this week makes it look like at least Julia, Michelle, and Jason will be targeting Ty. Jason, because of the betrayal, and the other two, because he's a threat with his idol and his advantage. Not that we've ever heard of anyone thinking that someone was a threat with their advantage.
Mm-hmm.
I really do think part of it from Julia's standpoint is that she's upset that he essentially outplayed her at the last tribal council while she was trying to convince him to play the idol. You know, she thought she was the puppet master, but she actually was totally out of the loop in everything that was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the issue that I see coming up here. Aubrey clearly and rightfully did not trust Julia. And she couldn't trust Michelle either because of her association with Julia. So because of that, the real vote had to be kept secret from them, with only Aubrey, Joe, Sydney, and Ty actually knowing what was going on. I think those are the overall repercussions, you know, we have to focus on here. Jeff Probst's Entertainment Weekly tease this week said it will be all about loyalty. Now, as usual, that could mean just about anything.
Yeah.
But I do think we know where the loyalty of Aubrey, Joe, Sydney, and Ty are right now. So to me, the question really pertains to Michelle and Julia. Does Julia quickly turn on Jason when she realizes she's now, you know, she picked the losing side? The previews suggest she doesn't. But she still could be playing both sides, or that could be the very beginning of the episode, and then she turns. You know, does Michelle turn on those she considered allies because they left her out of the plan? And does Ty really get targeted as retribution?
Mm-hmm.
Here's the thing. I can't see how Michelle, Julia, and Jason managed to make anything work with just the three of them. And I also don't see how they could get Aubrey, Sydney, or Joe to come to their side to get rid of Ty at this stage.
Yeah,
it would have to be some sort of weird, convoluted trickery. And it would also have to overcome the fact that Ty has both the idol and the extra vote.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm calling it, if anyone is safe, it's Ty.
Yeah.
But one of his close allies may be in danger, Rob.
Right.
Because I think Mark the Chicken's days may be numbered.
Yeah. Before I get to Mark the Chicken, just one other point on the Ty thing. I think that's
the most important person.
Well,
here.
Just to add to that, if the three-person grouping of Sydney and Aubrey and Joe are going to stick together and we feel like that Michelle and Julia and Jason are going to become a thing, then getting rid of Ty would force a 3-3 split potentially going into the final six, which would not be such a hot idea for Aubrey, Sydney, and Joe.
No, it wouldn't. Unless one of them flips.
I guess so, but I can't come up with the scenario where any of that is going to make sense. But all right, well, let's go back.
Since you took us down this path instead of Mark, well, we'll hold off on Mark. You know, the only possible weak links that I could see are Sydney or Ty going back to Jason. Sydney for strategic reasons, Ty for emotional ones because, you know, he's upset or sorry for what he did. But even while both of those are possibilities, I think it's a real stretch say that they're realistic possibilities.
Yeah.
So, okay, before I make my official pick here, we will go back to Mark because, you know, we've been seeing more of him than Joe on the show lately.
You've mentioned, yes.
Yes. And, okay, you've been seeing the edit, and you've been talking about it. The way it's worked this season is if you get lots more screen time, it means you're, you know, potentially leaving soon. So Mark could be literally going to the chopping block.
That is possible, yes.
And, you know, even if it's not like, you know, Jason doing it or Michelle or Julia, there was a secret scene with Mark annoying Joe and Joe doing the equivalent of yelling at him, get off my lawn.
Yeah. You know? Well, even Debbie, the previous week when Ty was having the reward, that she was talking about killing Mark the chicken. So it's definitely something that is in the ether out there.
Yeah. And in that one secret scene, Joe talked several times about how they should have eaten him already. So,
right.
You know, you know how they're having those different people come back and be Colonel Sanders?
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking Joe is the next Colonel Sanders, and we're going to be seeing Kentucky Fried Mark.
Yes. Wow. Well, he does have the look down pretty much already.
But I mean, honestly, and I know we're probably spending too much time on Mark, but you know, he is a pretty likable character. I don't know that the editors would humanize a chicken that much just to have him killed and eaten, because I just really feel like it's a terrible thing to do. You know, think of the children watching the show. Yeah. It could scar them for life.
It could. So I think that's probably a good piece of advice, though. If you're a survivor, just you want to eat the chickens as soon as you get them, because the longer they stay around, somebody's going to befriend them, and then it's going to be some sort of social currency lost by whoever is going to be saying, like, hey, why don't we eat your friend? So I think that the faster you eat the chickens, the less complicated it will be.
I actually used to have that as part of the rule about emotions, I think. It was don't get too emotionally attached to the animals.
Yes.
And that was specifically the Kimmy portion of the rule.
Yes. Okay.
So over time, that has faded, but I may have to reinstitute it for Ty.
Okay. All right. So, David, who is going to go home on Wednesday?
So I think we have three possibilities: Jason, Michelle, and Julia. I don't think Michelle has done anything to earn getting herself voted out, so I'm going to say she's safe. I do think it is possible that the others may want to keep Jason around a little bit as the jury goat that we had talked about, you know, just in case they need him. And let's face it, Julia has been the sneakiest. We heard Aubrey talk about her, a note she didn't want her around at the end because of that. And we also heard Ty say, you know, oh, we talked about it, and we can, you know, we'll get Scott now, we can get rid of Julia later. So after 1 week off where I didn't pick Julia to go, I'm going back to Julia again for my official prediction.
Yeah, I'm with you, actually. I think that Julia is the pick. I think that Jason makes all the sense in the world as well. But for some reason, I just feel like that he's going to be okay, whether he wins immunity or whether they decide that let's break up Julia and Michelle. And I feel like that Julia is the pick here.
And I do think that for Michelle, it may actually be a benefit to her if Julia is voted out.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the same way that Scott and Jason were seen as a single unit, Julie and Michelle are seen as a single unit. So we may be discussing that next week.
We will see. David, what's the hashtag?
I think it has to be Kentucky Fried Mark.
Kentucky Fried Mark. Okay, I think it's Kentucky Fried Joe.
Well, all right. So you want people to vote? Is it Kentucky Fried Joe or Kentucky Fried Mark?
Now, do you want to go with KFM just so you'd be like a trendier to have the word fried in there?
Sure, that's true, because it is KFC now. And yes. KFM's a lot shorter. So we'll do that. KFM.
All right, KFM. Sounds like a great radio station also. Okay. All right. So, David, all right. So we will be back next week to talk about why somebody lost. Maybe it'll be Julia. Maybe we'll both be on the right track. Maybe it'll be somebody that we're not even thinking of. And hopefully, no matter what, we're talking about why Mark is still around.
That's right. That's right.
All right. You can follow David on Twitter. He is at David Bloomberg. He's always tweeting up a storm with the survivors, but no Twitter press conference this week.
No, not as much. You know, Scott was busy tending to his some relative health issues during the episode, and there just wasn't as much to ask about.
All right. Well, great stuff as usual. We've got the Survivor Know-It-Alls back this Wednesday night, 9:15 p.m. In addition to every week, you hear him on News AF here on Rob's podcast. Tyson Apostle will be joining me for a supersized Survivor recap, of course, this week. So very excited about that. Looking forward to your comments on robinswebsite.com. And of course, you can subscribe and make sure you don't miss any of the podcasts when you go to robinswebsite.com/iTunes or search RHAP in your favorite podcatcher. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.